Well, hello, my dear friends, and I want to welcome you to yet another podcast, which I'm calling Samples. And today's podcast is basically a reiteration of the LAP letter that I sent out last Sunday that I titled Albino Cougars and Whales of the Deep. And I am grateful for you guys on the Lasting Supper. I do call you friends because that's what you are. You've become my friends. You're providing me with a deep sense of connection and understanding that I've lacked for a couple of years, as well as providing me with a lot of happiness and laughter. And just enjoy the incredible diversity of characters on the Lasting Supper. And you just provide me with so much joy. You've made a huge difference in my life, and I hope everyone on the Lasting Supper feels the same way. I hear back from many of you that it has made a difference in your life, and I'm so grateful for that. I know many of you send me personal emails and messages, and I really do appreciate those, which, by the way, is something I do with members of the Lasting Supper that I don't do anywhere else. I get lots of messages every day from people everywhere. But when I get an email or a message from a member of the Lasting Supper, I pay special attention and spend extra time with you. I'm investing far more time and energy into the members of the Lasting Supper because I consider it my community, as I know you do as well. So feel free to talk with me. That's what I'm here for. And if you want to talk in depth via phone or Skype, arrangements can be made for that too. I have a few of those a week, good in-depth Skype conversations. I just had one a couple of days ago with one of the members of the Lasting Supper. I give members of the Lasting Supper a special rate on these sessions. I love these deeply engaging conversations. I really enjoy the feedback I get as well when we talk together and when people share their individual journeys with me. You know, sometimes it's great to be a part of a community. Well, it's always great, in my opinion, to be a part of a community that's very supportive and encouraging. But once in a while, it's good to talk to somebody one-on-one. In fact, just last night, I got in touch with a person I consider my counselor, who also happens to be a member of the Lasting Supper and my spiritual director and so on. And we had a good long talk and just helped me to regain some focus. You know, We all need sounding boards. We all need somebody we can talk to, whether it's a good friend or a counselor or a spiritual director. So I'm grateful for the many people on the Lasting Supper who make themselves available to me so that I can, you know, process my stuff. One of the ways I come to conclusions is by thinking out loud, and I process externally. I sort of process by listening to myself speak. And, you know, some people process things in their minds and then speak. I process things while I'm speaking, and then it gets planted in my mind. And it's just a different way of being. That's the way I've always been, and so always the way I seem to operate. And that's why I really enjoy the Lasting Supper. I can be on there talking back and forth with different people and engaging with other people. And it helps me achieve a greater clarity of where I am. So I want to continue talking about the Z theory, which I feel is very important, something that I have to offer people. And I want to talk about it in smaller parts. So last week I gave a one-page summary of the Z theory, and I discovered to my delight and great pleasure that it was very beneficial to many of you. And I hope that's the case. I hope it provides the same kind of peace of mind and spirit that it provided me. And I'm really honest when I say that. I lived in theological anxiety for many, many years, over 30 years, when I really started to engage with theology and the idea about God and spirituality and religion. I was in intellectual theological torment for over 30 years, and I poured through the books. I have a very extensive library. And I've already given away hundreds and thousands of books in my life. There was one time in my life, I remember, when I decided to give up on my search for understanding, and I loaded up my Honda with boxes and boxes of books and drove them to the nearest used bookstore and sold them all. And I just depleted my library because I was just fed up with all these books that were full of knowledge and interesting facts and fed my intellect, but still didn't provide the answer. And my mind was on fire, and I'm talking hellfire. My mind was on fire because it just could not find the key to understanding how we are all one. How is it that God is in Christ reconciling the world to himself? And how is it that, you know, as I was a Christian preacher, how is it that he is the all in all and that all things are being reconciled to him and have been reconciled to him and he is the all in all? Like, this just did not make sense to me. I was good friends with Jewish people, Buddhist people, Hindus, atheists, agnostics, people of different religions, that I saw in them that they were good people, better than me, and who, you know, theologically were destined for hell, but it just did not make sense to me. So I was looking for the secret, looking for the answer to this conundrum, and I could not find it. And in the meantime, I'm having to preach every Sunday. So it was a torturous life for me in the ministry. As I have shared with you, and as you might already know, in May of 2009, when I was probably at the peak of intellectual, theological frustration, I went to sleep and I had a dream. And I woke up the next day and that intellectual, theological anxiety was gone. It had disappeared. It had flown away. I've enjoyed this very peaceful state of mind. And so I want to share this dream and this theory with people. I have a lot of work to do because right now it's mostly theoretical. I want to percolate it down into very useful and practical steps or ways of understanding that even a child can understand. So this is the dream I had. It's very simple. And I think it was inspired, well, no doubt it was inspired by a print that friends of mine have hanging in their house. And whenever we were invited to their house, they were wonderful people from South Africa. And whenever we came to their house, she knew how much I loved lamb in those days. And she would roast a leg of lamb with thyme, rosemary and thyme, and roast potatoes, and we would drink wine and have this leg of lamb. And but on their wall was this large print of a waterfall, very colorful waterfall, huge waterfall, like Niagara Falls size of waterfall. And I was always drawn to that image. And so I think it was a night after we had returned from our friends, after a leg of lamb and nice wine from South Africa. And I had this dream and I woke up the next day, as I said, completely at peace intellectually and theologically. So this is the dream. There's a huge waterfall. Oceans of water pour over the rim of the cliff. So that's the first part. I'll continue sharing the rest of the parts of the dream. We can't see above the rim, right? We're standing below, but we can guess that it is an infinite source, of course. We haven't been up there, but we can guess that it is an infinite source of water. There's no proof, only evidence, remarkable evidence, I'll grant you. We can't even say, though, that it exists. That word doesn't seem to match the grandeur of what is possibly above that rim, because it is infinite, never-ending, and humongous. We just know it must be. We can't say it exists like we exist in a place and time. This is infinite and goes on forever and ever and ever. It just is. And this is that which we call God. This is what some might call the absolute, the source, holy other, nirvana, Allah, Yahweh, the unknowable, the frontier, the closeted, the undiscovered. So, from a Christian perspective, this is that which we call God. I emphasize that this is what is above the rim. We cannot see it. It is invisible to us. This doesn't make it any less real or any more real, but it certainly makes it unprovable. It's not provable. There's overwhelming evidence that it is up there, but we haven't been up there. We haven't seen what is up there. For all we know, there could be a giant up there with a water hose. We have no idea what is up there. And this is where many Christians stumble and fall, because we like to call this infinite source God, and that's just it. And for many Christians, this God has an image or descriptors or characteristics or whatever. I don't know if you've ever visited the Niagara Falls. I have several times. I went there on my honeymoon with Lisa. And it is just unbelievable if you've ever been to a huge waterfall like Niagara Falls. And if you've ever been down below, like we were at the bottom of the Niagara Falls, and looking up, it's just like, where does this water come from? Like, it's just unbelievably never-ending and eternal and infinite and humongous, like this oceans of water pouring over the rim endlessly without relenting. And we, you know, of course, we've seen the Niagara Falls from the top as well, so we know what's up there. It's a huge river, but from below, we don't know. It's unprovable what's up there. We know there is some kind of source. It's infinite, and it's amazing, and it's absolute, wholly other. So I remember many years ago when I was trying to explain my Christian faith to a friend who'd become an atheist. And if you've read my post from Naked Pastor from years ago, I started blogging Naked Pastor back in 2004 or 5, and started cartooning in 2006. But if you read way back in Naked Pastor, you can certainly see my development. I haven't always thought this way, and I very seldom do I use the word God. Now, if I need to use the word God, I actually say that which we call God, because for me, the word God is very limiting, and it's all kinds of baggage stuck to it. And now I prefer that which we call God, which, yes, it's just another label, and it's convenient. But my conversations with my atheist friend was... years ago, when I was still standing in theological certitude, I was still fairly certain, and, you know, felt that God existed, and I had my own certitude and certainty about that. But he kept pressing me because I felt so certain about the existence of God, yet couldn't seem to provide enough substantial proof to settle his mind. No matter how much I talked about my personal journey or my deeply held beliefs or my own experiences, my intense spiritual experiences, and even things that were amazing incidences, nothing I could say provided the proof he needed to restore his belief and his faith. These conversations were always frustrating to me because deep down I knew he was right. There's no way I could prove it to him. I had substantial evidence, but it was not proof. I could not point to God and say, look, there he is. I could point to evidences that there was something that I called God. So now I explain it this way. Let's say a good friend of mine, someone I trust and believe completely, who's never in his life lied to me, he comes back from deer hunting one day, all excited because he tells me he saw a cougar in the woods. Now, I live in New Brunswick in eastern Canada, and there are strong rumors here that there are cougars in these parts, and some people claim to have seen them, but it's yet to be proven. But let's say my trustworthy friend is excitedly telling me that he really did finally see one. It's true, they're here. Not only was it a cougar, but it was an albino cougar. And I'm looking at him in disbelief. Did he get a picture? No, he didn't get a picture, of course. He didn't have time to get his phone out. But he did get a picture on his cell phone of what looks like a partial paw print. So I look at it. Interesting. Yeah, maybe I can see a partial print. I'm not sure, though. And he tells me that as he was walking along a deer trail, he saw some movement far ahead on the path, which you normally do when you're deer hunting, and sees a flash of white. And when you're deer hunting, this usually means you saw the warning flash of a white-tailed deer's tail. So, and I'm an experienced deer hunter back in the day. And he says, as he crouched down and clicked the safety off on his rifle, and I've done this many times, and he raised it and looked through his scope in the direction of the white flash, looking for movement or the straight line of a deer's back. And eventually, he sees slight movement, and then he couldn't believe his eyes. There, 100 yards up the path, looking straight at him, was a white cougar. He says they locked eyes for about 15 seconds, and then in a flash, the cat was gone. Now, in fear and trepidation, but with unrelenting curiosity, of course, he walked slowly up the path to where he said he thought the cougar stood, and he bent down and found a partial print, took a picture of it. And at the same time, he says he heard the blood-curdling scream of the cougar in the distance, and his hunting day was over. He returned to tell me this unbelievable tale. So, you know, what do you do with this? I believe my friend believes he saw what he saw and heard what he heard, but do I believe there's a cougar in the woods that he saw? And not only a cougar, but an albino cougar just a few miles up the road from where I live? I'm not sure what to do with this information. I've lived here for many, many years and never seen one or heard one or seen a track. But my friend's not crazy or prone to exaggeration. He just doesn't lie. But this is just too spectacular a story. I'm not sure what to do with it. He never provided me with any proof. Just an incredible but unsubstantiated story. His testimony, it's what it is, testimony. But he couldn't be used in a court as proof of the presence of cougars in New Brunswick, especially albino ones. So this is how many people feel about people's stories about God. There seems to be lots of overwhelming evidence, so many scriptures, Christian and otherwise, that provide testimonies about this God. Some people claim to have seen, heard, or felt something. Many of these people are completely sane and not prone to lying, but it all comes down to their testimony. It's word of mouth. It's a report of their feelings or intuitions or insights or something that some people might call miracles and others might call coincidence or serendipity. And the fact that these testimonies come to us from all around the world and down through thousands of years with uncanny similarities is impressive, but it all comes down to testimonies. There's just no proof. Excuse me. So we're standing at the bottom of the falls looking up, and we know that there must be something up there. So next week I'll talk about how the water tumbling down gives us excellent clues as to what is actually above the rim. It's water, likely, and lots of it, and coming from some kind of an infinite source. But for now, all we can share are our strikingly similar testimonies of what is up there. Christians, Jews, Muslims like to call this God, Yahweh, or Allah, and that there is heaven up there, or paradise, or infinity, or the kingdom, or Buddhists call this nirvana or bodhisattva or Buddhahood or compassion or nothingness or the all. Hindus might call it God or gods or the infinite or the eternal. Scientists might call this the unknown, the not yet disclosed, the not yet revealed, the frontiers of scientific discovery, the unexplored. Or perhaps a quantum physicist might call it the source or the really real or the unified oneness or just reality. You know, one of my favorite quantum physicists is David Bohm, and who's now passed away, but just a fascinating person. You can read his stuff. There's a collection of his essays, The Best of David Bohm, and you can even catch him on YouTube. In fact, you can catch him on YouTube talking with Krishnamurti. They were good friends. An interesting man, and he felt that there was this infinite source, that reality was always in movement, and that there was this infinite source. And when he was pressed by an interviewer, he actually says that he felt that this infinite source is somehow compassionate or benevolent. And I thought that was interesting. Or perhaps philosophers and mystics could call it the one or oneness or the ground of all being, or the archetypal or the uncaused cause. I could go on and on with descriptors and words that attempt to describe what this unnameable infinite source is. Testimonials and theories, sometimes from wise and intelligent men and women, and sometimes from straight out wackos, but they're all pointing to the same mystery with different methods and languages, all of them insufficient, though, to prove, but sufficient enough to give evidence and even to give us some serious pause, wouldn't you say? This is why I claim it isn't necessary for me to reject my Christian heritage or education or language to simply adopt another. In fact, I incorporate all languages into mine because it fills mine out to make sense for me and to help me articulate to others what I mean. I no longer worry about how people label me because I do not label myself. I do believe there are better insights and languages I could use in my testimony than other ones, but that's my preference. I have a friend who, when I asked her what the unknown is for her, she told me that the most mystical spiritual times in her life is when she goes out on her husband's fishing boat. He's a professional fisherman, like lobster and ocean fish. And she loves to go out looking for whales. For her, whales symbolize all that is good and mysterious and powerful and gracious and eternal and loving. Looking for and waiting for and longing for, sighting a whale is full of mystical profundity that makes her feel one with all things. And sighting a whale is all she needs to be at peace with herself and know that everything is right with the world. And that's her language. You know, I've been out on a boat when a whale has surfaced near me, and it is awesome. I mean, it is terrifyingly awesome. And it is like you're all of a sudden in touch with another world where this creature from the deep presents itself, and it's a giant, and you feel small and insignificant, and yet you sense its grace and its gentleness, and that you're somehow one with this magnificent creature. And it is a very mystical. The times I've seen whales has been very mystical moments. I remember years ago when my son and I, my family, we went to a vineyard conference down on the shore in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. And one afternoon they offered packages. So one package was to go deep sea fishing. And of course, my son and I preferred that. The other package was to go whale watching. And we went out on this deep sea fishing boat, and a lot of people on the boat were very sick because the ocean was just tossing us around. It was huge waves, and the water was very black, dark, you know. We caught some fish, but more profound than that was we saw whales. And it felt like it was in the novel Moby Dick when we were on this small deep sea fishing vessel, and these whales were surfacing in this black water that was tossing us around, and these monstrous creatures blowing steam, and it was terrifying and magnificent and mystical all at the same time. And it was truly a spiritual moment for me. And this is my friend's language. And though, you know, I've experienced her metaphor for mystery and oneness with whales, it's not sufficient for me. For me, there's something more I need to help me feel in touch with all that is and one with all that is. But it is for her, and it provides the same value for her as mine does for me. And this is why I feel no anxiety to reject one paradigm for another one that simply functions in the same way in attempting to describe the indescribable. This is one thing that the Z-Theory dream has done for me, is I realize that we're all one, that We are all connected. There is no separation. And our different paradigms and worldviews and thoughts and languages are ripples upon the surface of the waters that doesn't change the fact that we are one. And as I always say, I have a little saying, my home is in Christianity, but I have cottages everywhere, and I'm completely at peace about this and am free of theological anxiety about it. And so I just wanted to share that with you today, and I hope this makes some sense to you and helps you. My goal, my personal goal that I want to achieve very soon is to somehow break down this theory that has meant so much to me and brought me so much peace to my mind and percolate it down into very practical and useful language that will be beneficial to other people and hopefully deliver to them the same kind of intellectual and theological peace that I now enjoy. So blessings to everybody. Love you all, and I'll see you at the Lasting Supper, where you can help yourself.